Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel. A delight to have you with us on this 25th of March. Let me introduce our panel to you. We have WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Spring is coming.
It is. It is officially here, but unofficially it still is very much winter, so we hope that... did I hear 50? So there was a... I heard a murmuring.
That, later this week, perhaps?
Yes, that would be very nice. Yeah. Take that.
Meanwhile, I have two sweaters on today.
But apparently no snowstorm. No snowstorm.
We're going to miss the nor'easter.
Be south of us, if all things, you know.
That's good.
University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo is here.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. And Times Union associate editor Mike Spain is here.
Good morning.
It's a delight to have you all here. Thank you very much. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let's talk about this story. And this is, of course, a story about the Malaysian Airlines flight that disappeared on March 8th, and then here we are on March 25th and still discussing this this issue. So yesterday, a British satellite company has solved one crucial aspect of the mystery surrounding the Malaysia Airlines flight that disappeared on March 8th using a complex mathematical process to determine that it ended its journey in the middle of the southern Indian Ocean, guided by a principle of physics called the Doppler effect. The company, Inmarsat, analyzed tiny shifts in the frequency of the plane's signals to infer the plane's flight path and likely final location. The method had never been used before to investigate an air disaster. The first definitive news of the fate of the Boeing 777 jet brought heartbreak to the families of those on board as Malaysia's prime minister announced on Monday that no one is believed to have survived the flight. And now the both China and most of the relatives are saying, okay, but show us evidence. And so on one hand, you think that there's somewhat of a definitive, well, not definitive, but there is a conclusion to this. And yet there are many who are saying, okay, but if you're saying it's there, why can't you show us any debris from the plane or come up with anything or a site? And of course, weather has a lot to do with it, but.
I'm sorry.
I was going to say, would it surprise you that anybody would be skeptical of information they're getting from official sources on this? The story has changed so many times. It's going to take a lot for someone to be convinced that this is definitive. And yet, it does seem to be strong evidence that when you take the trajectory of the plane and the amount of fuel it had and the time, that it couldn't be anywhere near a landmass. And what other conclusion could you reach?
Yeah, Malaysian Airlines has certainly shown the need for good public relations. They don't have it. They could use some help. The latest outrage was texting the survivors after their three-week wait.
Yeah, that was
saying,
a nice touch.
Oh, well, all hope for human life is gone. Sorry about the inconvenience. It was just terrible. But the story to me now is a human one. There is this deep need to see and have the remains of your dead. This goes back, to all Roman times. You didn't leave. The worst offense you could ever do is just leave a body out, right? Your enemies, you just leave it out and let the dogs and the vultures get after it. And that's sort of what you feel like with those bodies lost and fragmented, whatever they are at the bottom of the sea. And people have this desire to get it back. I hope they can be accommodated, but I am skeptical.
And there are so many sub-stories here. I'm very interested in the relationship between Malaysia and China because you may know that the Chinese survivors got very angry and, quote, busted through the Chinese police lines to go and protest. Now, as you know, there are protests and there are protests. In Tiananmen Square, we were quite sure that there were a lot more people and they weren't allowed to protest. Mm-hmm. So the Chinese authorities, for whatever reason, it may be because they don't want to get it wrong in terms of public opinion, those people got through and then they were all given bus rides back to their... Back to their
There's
their
a,
place,
a whole yeah. bunch of things done wrong. I mean, just rude. At one point, the survivors were all staying in at a certain hotel waiting for news, and they had to be all pushed out and put into other rooms because there was a Grand Prix in town, and the rooms had been reserved. I mean, that's the sort of thing
that's nice. I was watching CNN last night, and Anderson Cooper said, we will not show any of the family members tonight because they have been through far too much, and we do not want to add to their hurt. And I assumed that meant that CNN had been asked to leave the hotel.
Another nice touch.
Another nice touch. I also heard there was a moment, and they, you know, when you're half listening to something, and they said that the debris was about 1,200 miles away from Albany. And I thought to myself, my God, is it really gone that far off course? And then realizing they meant Albany, Australia.
Yeah. There's a lot of Albany.
South of Perth, but still. But you can understand the family saying, okay, well, where is the debris?
Absolutely.
But you can also understand the technological and just physical issues of getting to this site, which is, some 15,000 feet deep. In the Indian Ocean, and some of the most violent, they said there could not be a worse place. And also, my question is, could that have had anything to do with the crash itself? Do you know what I mean? Because of the turbulence of wind and storms.
Hurricane force winds, perhaps, but if you're way out in the middle of nowhere, literally,
running out of
fuel.
Absolutely.
One interesting aspect that will probably come out of this is a change in the way that air flights are monitored. The technology has long existed. We actually had a story last week by Eric Anderson, our business writer, that 50 years ago in 1964, General Electric developed a prototype of a satellite monitoring of airplanes at the Global Research Center, which was called the R&D Center up in Niskayuna. This is 50 years ago, the technology to use satellites to track planes. Right now, they record all the data, and then it goes down with the plane to the bottom of the ocean. I mean, it could be recorded in a cloud. There's some estimates it might cost about $25 a day for an airline to have this added to it, and I can't think after this that there won't be a mandatory
It does seem that way after every major
satellite
crash.
Satellite or cloud recording of it. It just seems that this will change the way planes are monitored.
I have kudos to the New York Times, though, for, I don't know if you saw these, but they put in these incredible maps that were available to look, especially online, to talk about the debris, where it may have traveled, looking at possible patterns with currents, also just putting that whole area into perspective, and again showing you just the enormity of the corner of the world that they have been looking at since the beginning of this tragedy on March 8th. So it does put it into some perspective, and also a lot of the false clues that were things that were labeled as debris that were not, and so forth. So. You said something that struck me, and I'm not sure I heard you, but you were talking about the flight recorders and wondering whether they would actually ever get.
Yeah, because they're, we don't know where they are yet.
15,000 feet.
They're deep. They've been under now for what is this? We're getting on to close
three
to a
weeks.
Month now.
Yeah.
So by the time you find them, close to a month, they're not viable forever. So yeah, Mike raised the right point. Why are they in a box that goes down to the bottom of the sea? Why isn't the message transmitted as they're flying? But I also am really quite amazed at the technology that's gone into finding and tracking this plane. It seems like magic.
You can believe what you want. Our friend Kay from Germantown just checked in and said she learned about the Doppler effect in high school.
Sure.
She's glad it's still around. However, you can believe what you want. Seems to me, one cannot take that, even that so-called science on blind faith that's where it was. I don't.
Again, why wouldn't people be skeptical of the latest definitive information when you've had many different versions right from the day one when there was an oil slick off Vietnam?
Sure.
That was supposed to be the plane.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with other stories that are making news. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Troy Chromatic Concerts, presenting Trio Solisti, the piano trio, this Sunday at 3 p.m. at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, troychromaticconcerts.org. Gordon Fire Equipment, offering fire extinguisher service and inspections to businesses and organizations in the Hudson Valley, family-owned since 1956, gordonfire.com. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974, preservenys.org.
Federal jury on Monday found five associates of the convicted swindler Bernie Madoff guilty of 31 counts of aiding one of the largest Ponzi schemes in history. With that verdict, the jurors rejected the former employee's central defense that only Mr. Madoff had known the evil purpose behind the chores he told them to carry out, while they had simply trusted for decades in the honesty of a man widely known and respected on Wall Street. So five associates found guilty, 31 counts of this involvement in this Ponzi scheme.
And which, by the way, Joe, a son dead by suicide, mm-hmm. A brother who admitted his guilt, mm-hmm. and took a plea and took 10 years in prison during this time. And now comes the infrastructure.
But for a long time, right? I mean, this
is five years, and people, you know, lost everything. It must be excruciating to sit and watch this case unfold as slowly as it has. And yet it was complicated, so the government is saying it needed the time to put all the evidence in order.
But the jurors, speaking afterwards, just said, you know, there was no doubt about it in their minds that these people had convicted themselves.
It can't carry off a scheme like this alone. It takes whole
infrastructure. Well, somebody's got to backdate all of the stuff and the orders.
Some of the testimony from the one employee who turned state's evidence in order to get a reduction in an enormously long sentence. I loved the testimony that he gave, that at one point an investor asked for, you know, a ledger of the investments, and no such ledger existed because no such investments existed. So this little team here kind of cooked up a fake ledger, and they printed out furiously as he's in the other room, and it's hot off of the presses, which is no good. So they throw it in the refrigerator, and then they bounce it back and forth between each other, among each other. Yeah, in order to, like, loosen up the pages and make it look like it had actually been. I'm sorry. That is conspiracy. Yeah, to quickly age the fake ledger. So pretty impressive testimony.
So how do you not know then that you're doing something? And that was what was really hard, I guess, for a lot of these people to believe that as I just mentioned.
That they were all stupidly misled, yeah.
One fast comment which we should make, and that is one of the defendants was Joanne Krupe, and who was the person of the same name who we all love, mm-hmm. was the editorial page editor of the Times Union,
and now at the College of St. Rose,
and not the same person. We can
no.
say that
it's really hard for me to read this story because it was like, Joanne, what were you doing?
What happened?
It must have been very difficult for her to read this story.
Yeah.
And I was looking for dollar amounts, but in the testimony, were they talking about what their take of this was?
Well, they were well paid. The papers all said they were very well paid.
Meaning just their salary, but they weren't getting a percentage on the...
No, not that
ever came out, but yeah, they were getting people's money in the form of, you know, big salaries for many years. They worked for decades for Madoff.
It all goes to show, does it not, that so many people get into these things and you always wonder, at least I do, what in hell could they have been thinking?
How do you justify that? You know?
What could they have been thinking?
Well, probably at one point they expected they would get some of the money back and they'd get back in the black and they'd be able to cover it up. And you wonder how many times that's happened, but it must have gotten out of hand.
Yeah. Madoff said that in the beginning. He thought that, I mean, what was he, the head of NASDAQ or something like that? He was, you know, I mean, this is a major player, you know, on Wall Street. But there were two groups. Of course, there were the victims, too. and, you know, all of whom wanted this too good to be true, so therefore it wasn't true, payout at times when nobody was getting anything like that. But and yet they go ahead and do it.
Yeah. One of the things about the story that really struck me was is that, of course, we talk about 5 years, but they had the evidence going back to, I believe, 1972, early 1970s of this whole thing starting, and many of these people being part of it as it was being so built, as the scheme was being right. developing and worked of going back. That's a long time.
And you know, Madoff has been doing interviews from his jail cell.
Serving 150 years, what else is there to do?
Right. Well, yeah. And but he said the bank knew. His bank knew. That's what he said. They had to know.
Yeah, it's like you say, you don't pull off a scheme like this for as many decades as he did without some people being aware.
As long as there's cover, I think that people just turn away. What you need is integrity. What you need is ethics. And what you need is a really good watchdog.
Yeah.
So this kind of thing doesn't happen.
We didn't have any of that for a while.
And as one of the, I believe it was the U.S. Attorney, mm-hmm. said, you know, you don't pull something like this off without a huge crew of people helping you do it, because mm-hmm. it's the largest Ponzi scheme in the history of our country. You don't do this without a lot of people. And you wonder even if we've kind of scratched the surface in that regard.
Okay, now that the prosecutors are done with this case, I'm hoping maybe they'll turn their eye on the rest of Wall Street and try to kind of sort out that mess from 2008. We don't have too many people being answerable for that yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That would
be
a good thing.
Well, also, have we reached any agreement with the victims?
Madoff?
Well, they have gotten back through sales and suits and all that something like $11 billion.
That's right.
out of it, 17 billion, 17 point something that,
right.
that they actually lost. That's just the money invested. That's not, you know, the money they thought they were getting back
right.
from fake investment. But that's still a lot of money to be lost. But they have distributed $11 billion.
We're going to any final thoughts on that?
Yeah, I wonder what it would have been like to be on that jury.
Wow.
I often think that. The jurors' remarks afterwards are astounding. And you wonder what, you know, what
kind of debates went on.
Or what the prejudices are. There was one woman who was Jewish, as I am, by the way, who said, in case you didn't know, and who said, I'm Jewish, so I'm glad I'm glad he was guilty, you know.
Glad we got him.
Because, you know, everybody's mother, whether you're Italian or Irish or whatever you mm-hmm. are, when somebody is convicted of something bad, says it's bad for the Italians, bad for the Jews, bad for the, you know, for the Irish. And one wonders if that's what somebody is sitting there on a jury thinking about when it comes down to, it may not be everything, but it could be part of it.
I've said this before. I'll say it again. I served on one jury in my life for a case that was 5 days, and it was one of the most formulative experiences of my life. I learned more about humankind in that 5 days than I have. Any of you ever served?
They won't put me on. No. I keep begging.
It is
not as a reporter.
That's what I. How did I even get picked? But my mother-in-law was the foreman.
No.
Oh.
Yes.
You and your mother-in-law, same jury?
Yes.
That's
what
fence.
Country was that
a
in?
A small county that you live in.
We live in Washington County, right? We don't know how it happened, but we didn't get.
There's not very many people.
No.
But was Henry Fonda sitting in the room or not?
Yeah. Later on, a man who looked eerily like him.
Were you angry? No.
Yeah. Of course, I was next to my mother-in-law. That was a cheap
But is there one?
That's going to come back.
Don't get me started on mother-in-law jokes. I don't get that.
We'll
Stop.
Be back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Romeo, and Mike Spain, and we welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We move on this morning and talk about a New York State budget. It's almost April 1st. We're getting to that time. So now we talk about the issue of school funding.
That seems to be, you know, the big issue that coming down to the final 7 days before the budget has to be adopted, that's getting all the attention. You know, the advocates for Increasing state aid to local school districts were out in big force in Albany yesterday. You know, the regents themselves have said that the state should boost its education funding by $1.3 billion. The governor's budget, Governor Andrew Cuomo's budget, which he proposed in January, contains $807 million of increased school aid, which is no chump change. And but that's not enough to correct the problems. There's a lot of people who had supported the governor in the past who are now criticizing him, saying that it has led some districts to the brink of insolvency. Of course, among those is the Alliance for Quality Education, and their director, Billy Easton, was in Albany yesterday using some tough rhetoric. I'm reading from a story today by Casey Seiler, our state editor, who says that, you know, this is, you know, just it's getting tougher and tougher the way people are criticizing the governor, but it doesn't seem to be getting any traction yet. But it's only a week left and there's going to have to be some kind of accommodation.
Well, it does point to the fact, Mike, that he's being attacked, the governor, from the left.
That's right.
That's one of his.
That's correct.
That's one of his problems, because, you know, right now, you know, he's been a sort of untouchable. His numbers are coming down, but only slightly.
Only slightly,
and that could be just nothing. But the left is attacking, and saying things like not enough money for schools, bringing Cynthia Nixon, is that her name?
Cynthia Nixon from Sex and the City, the actress who was quite supportive of the governor for, you know, the marriage equality and for Women's Equality Act, right?
She said, this isn't the governor I voted for.
Look at Bill Samuels from the
he's been here many times.
Yeah.
But he
was an early supporter of Andrew Cuomo, and he couldn't be more critical.
Well, that's right. Yeah. But I tell you, I like the guy, and he's been in here before these microphones many times. Mm-hmm. But I get the feeling sometimes that there's a whole class of people who pick out an issue or a time and say, okay, now I'm going to be. Because remember, his father was Howie the Horse Samuels, who ran for governor. And, you know, this is his sort of time to shine. So, you know, it's not that. One has to evaluate whether they're right or wrong. But on the other hand, one also looks into the human parts of why people do certain things.
You're
thinking he's insincere in this
criticism? No, but I think this is a time for him to be, you know, to sort of his star to shine. Young Samuels.
Mm-hmm. Well, Samuels.
To criticize the governor is a way for him to take center stage, is what you're saying.
Well, let's put it this way. Maybe.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Well, in addition to Bill Samuels, who is famously now out,
campaign finance,
and campaigning for reform of campaign finance, et cetera. There's others. I mean, even the League of Women Voters, the New York Civil Liberties Union, and other advocates are, out speaking about issues that are getting some traction. And that specifically yesterday, the other issue was this idea of a tax credit. Cardinal Dolan, the Roman Catholic cardinal from New York, was up in the Capitol last week pushing, along with others, for a tax credit, not a tax deduction, but a tax credit that would let people make a donation to private schools and religious schools, and parochial schools, and get a tax credit. And there's an awful lot of people like the ACLU, others who are saying that would really hurt education. It's a backdoor voucher system. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It plainly is. Yeah.
The interesting thing is that the good reporting, like in your paper, Mike, they take a look. The reporters will take a look at things that get shoved into either house's budget. So, for example, the Senate budget had a thing for giving some relief, tax relief, to people who bought yachts. I think I read that this morning in Capital Confidential file. So, the lobbyists show up. They have lots of money that they can direct into a campaign. They ask for something. It's not if you do this, I'll do that, because that would be against the law. It's just that, you know, they're listened to quite carefully, and you'd have to be pretty dumb not to understand what the real transactions are here.
Well, still, all the parties involved are expressing optimism that in the next 7 days they will come
together. Oh, it will be done. It's going to be done.
And it takes a few days. There's not going to be any emergency legislation, which doesn't require that. Is it a three-day sitting period?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So by Friday, we should have the semblance of a budget.
My friend Danny Farrell, who's the chair of the Ways and Means Committee, assured me that it was going to get done, and it was going to get done on time. You know why? Because they have all learned one lesson. They can do anything they want up here, and nobody cares, nobody blinks. But it got to be sort of de rigueur for the papers and everybody else to criticize the late budget. So they do their mischief, but now they get their mischief done on time. And that's the difference.
And then they can come back and still address some of these issues.
Sure.
Part of the reason that it's sailing through is that, once again, it's a Cuomo budget? I mean, we're talking about some little tweaks here and there, but basically they're not rewriting or redrafting
that's
anything.
The way it works, right?
Yes.
I mean, the governor proposes
the way,
a budget.
That is the way it works. And because of certain court decisions, the governor now clearly has the upper hand in the extension. See, if you extend the budget, if they don't get it done on time, the governor has the upper hand. Nobody can change what he has basically said. So they don't want to allow that to happen. Yeah. They don't want to give him that space.
One other story real quick is just because I like saying the word Lucy's.
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 Yeah. What is a Lucy?
It's a Ricky's.
Lucy, Ricky, and little Ricky. No, Lucy, L-O-O-S-I-E, is a...
We have it out in front here all the time.
Is a loose cigarette.
Yeah, we have it here.
And so it's not in a pack, and so Schenectady is cracking down.
Right. It's almost become a quality of life issue. The mayor, Gary McCarthy, is campaigning against the sale, which is illegal, but wants to step up the enforcement against the sale of Lucy's cigarettes, a single cigarette. They're like a buck, and you can go into a convenience store and buy them, or you can buy them on the street, I guess. In fact, now the city council...
Just stand out in front here, you'll see.
Yeah.
By the way, can you imagine that?
Yeah.
A buck for
a
one cigarette.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's incredible, the cost of cigarettes.
In East Africa, where I worked, that was the only way cigarettes were sold. No one could afford a whole pack of cigarettes. That was the exchange.
Wow. Well, but maybe they should spend more time cutting down on, heroin sales as opposed to Lucy's. Think
well,
about
the rationale here is that...
I think you're talking about street sales, and he's talking about an actual going into a store and buying them.
Yeah, no, it's both. Actually, Joe, I'm sorry. It's both.
Yeah, it is.
Well, absolutely.
You can see Lucy's being sold right out. I've said it now four times right in front of this building.
Right.
No, absolutely.
But in Schenectady, the issue is the convenience stores are getting away with selling them. There's not any enforcement. Some people say, there's a whole lot. In fact, someone made that case. There's a whole lot more you should be enforcing and not spending time going in convenience stores. But what's happened is people hang out around the convenience stores and neighbors complain about tough crowds. They think other illegal activity is going on. And this is the way that the mayor wants to crack down and make these convenience stores comply. The city council backed him 6-1 and they modified the city code. And they're basically going to go start a lot of code enforcement, and if a convenience store has enough violations, they can be shut down. And that will eliminate an eyesore on the street and make the quality of life better, hopefully, and people will buy houses and move there and get to pay the taxes.
Harassment of small business, really.
Yeah.
Well,
it is a quality of life issue.
It's just one of those things.
It is. And we know that quality of life issues can frequently lead to the lowering of crime rates. In fact, that's exactly what the Giuliani administration and this guy, Bill Bratton, who is there now and his successors, all did. You jump a turnstile, you get a guy from jumping a turnstile, and it turns out that if you get those guys, the squeegee guys and everybody else, the crime rate goes down. Now, that's interesting.
Well, that's the approach in Schenectady with Mayor Gary McCarthy, I guess.
And some of these places have some of these stores have signs on them that say, "We don't sell Lucy's."
Some, yes. But there you
but go. Maybe.
But maybe. Let's take a break.
So you could buy a pack of cigarettes and then sell them at a dollar each.
Absolutely, and that's what happens.
I am in the wrong business.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
You buy them for $8-$10 a pack, right?
And
is that what
they
cost? And sell 20 cigarettes for 20. So you make make 100% profit or more.
That's
but
why
it's against the law. Don't try it.
Okay.
All right, now that we've figured out Rosemary's retirement plan, we'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Chandler's Restaurant, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, next to Yankee Candle, offering lunch 7 days, candlelit dinners, wine cellar, full bar seating, and Berkshire Brewing Company beer dinners. Chandlers.YankeeCandle.com. And Topperson, a topical treatment for pain associated with neuropathy and diabetes, supporting the American Diabetes Association 2014 Tour de Cure in Saratoga Springs. TeamTopperson.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable discussion. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. The United States and its closest allies on Monday cast Russia out of the group of eight industrialized democracies, their most exclusive club, to punish President Vladimir Putin for his lightning annexation of Crimea while threatening tougher sanctions if he escalates aggression against Ukraine. President Obama and the leaders of Canada, Japan, and Europe's four strongest economies gathered for the first time since the Ukraine crisis erupted last month, using a closed two-hour meeting on the sidelines of a summit meeting about nuclear security to project a united front against Moscow. Ho-hum?
A little bit ho-hum. It's a symbolic move, and symbolism does mean something in diplomacy. But if anybody's waiting around for Putin to go, oh, my God, I didn't know you were really upset, I'll pull those troops right out, then we're all nuts. And of course, this is a game of, tit for tat. And so now we've hurt him. He's going to come back. And he has a lot of ways he can hurt the United States. I'm looking at what happens if he starts selling arms or technology to Iran, for example.
Even if he sells them as Lucy's.
Yeah.
But I have to say that I think that NPR did an uncharacteristically really good job yesterday by going out and figuring out that the Russian people, the polls, the independent polls are showing 70% support for Putin in this my gang is better than your gang kind of stuff. That's the way that it goes. And so he's achieving a great deal of personal goals in terms of the support of the Russian people here. And I have to say, Rosemary, you're the first one to raise this with us here. It is unclear to me that this is not an open and shut, this was a bad thing on Putin's part. There's a lot of interstitial, material here that is just gives the world or some people in the world the idea that maybe he is not entirely wrong.
Well, I also have been doing more reading, so I may have changed a bit from my initial
position.
Yeah,
you do. You do that.
Have you evolved on this?
I have evolved on this. And so Putin now, he's on a pretty dangerous course. He's had great success, first with his Olympics, which were really corrupt, and a lot of money was spent in ways that did not help the Russian people, yet he put on a great Olympics. Then he turns his attention—
But by the
attention,
way, can I just stop you for a second and say that's true. Whenever any of these countries spend enormous amounts of money on the thing, and I sometimes suspect that we get on Putin a little bit more than we get on some of the people who are closer
absolutely
to us.
Yeah. Absolutely. So he has this great Olympics. Then he turns his attention a little bit further along in the Black Sea and takes care of that little Crimea problem with great ease, let me say. Great ease.
Yeah, seamless
and
almost.
It was the way Bush imagined our foray into Iraq was going to go. Mm-hmm. Putin actually pulled it off. And now what comes next?
Okay, it was a very different situation.
It wasn't, Mike.
Just the military, the way the
smoothness of it. No, but it is the real question about what the reception was going to be when you got there. Bush misjudged it, And Putin didn't.
They welcome us with flowers. Yeah.
Correct. And now what happens next? He's massed on that Ukraine border. Can he go over? Can he move into Transnistria and to some other areas in Georgia he's already taken over? You know, Russia is not hated in these areas. He has clout. That's why the whole area, Poland,
absolutely.
Poland for one, Latvia for another, Moldova. Very concerned, Moldova, right? They're
Estonia.
All watching this.
Yeah,
so
but,
what does he do next? He's now being isolated from the West. We were treating him since 1989, since the fall of the Iron Curtain, we were treating him as like, okay, Russia's different now. It's going to be modern. It wants to be part of the new wave. But we didn't support it. We put our money into Iraq instead of bolstering Russia so that democracy took over and there was wealth and consumerism, which would have made them Western. We isolated them from the beginning. And now he is going back into the Russian empire mode. I mean, what happens next? We need to be ready for it.
And one has to think about whether or not, you know, and this may seem wacko, but whether or not this military-industrial complex in this country needs a Cold War. And this fits pretty much into the idea that here are the competitors. Now let's start building the submarines and the defense plants and the tanks and the rest of it. I'm not so sure that we're already hearing some of that in the press.
I'm always amazed at how military buildup is a response to problems like this and how worthless military might is in a situation
sure,
like
where
this.
Where are we going
We have tons more army.
Great point, yeah.
We have tons more army and military that we are not going to invade. Invade, I guess, is it invade if we defend them? We're not going to protect Ukraine with our military. So,
even with the Cuban thing, you know, for those of us old enough to remember it, you know, there was a nail biter. We woke up the next morning. We didn't know if we were going to be dead or not. When we woke up, and it turns out...
At that point, we did.
Yeah, then we did. But it turns out that there was a lot more to it in terms of our protecting ourselves than we thought in terms of what we had over in Turkey and the stuff that was pointed at the Soviet Union at the time, the rest of it. So there's always a lot more to it.
There's a lot of people who would gain from the reemergence of the, or the, you know, replenishment of our military might. You know, a lot of in the military-industrial complex, and they're just looking for excuses. This gives them an excuse to say, don't cut back on the military like Obama is planning to do. And,
sure.
And you know, the John McCains would be in there. And you know, but it is fascinating when you look at Rosemary's point that we're isolating Putin, and that really fuels this growth of this reemergence of the Soviet kind of, you know, system. You know, they won't call it that, but the Russian Federation, you know, and going back to the old Soviet states. And really, after World War II, there were a lot of people that said the U.S. should have been more involved with the rebuilding of Russia and made it more westernized.
Yeah. Didn't take us long, did it?
No.
But certainly after 1989, the wall comes down. People are ready to become part of the world, and we, you know, they have suffered. Eastern Europe and the Russian provinces have really suffered with the change to capitalism. It was not easy, and so you have this regrowth of the idea of, oh yeah, let's go back to the Soviet times. We were on top of the world then, and that's where a lot of Putin's popularity comes from. I really you know how suspect I am of polls here, but particularly in Russia. I would be suspect of them. I think that people there want what people everywhere have, and that's Western consumerism and freedom.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think they want,
Blue jeans.
Yeah, they want blue jeans.
Well, on the other hand,
items,
there is something in the Russian national character, and I always fight with my colleagues in the academy as to whether there is such a thing as a national character. But there is something that is, you know, we need a strong leader. And I think
they do.
Yeah, and I think Putin. We should not make a Boy Scout out of Putin. You know, he's a guy who wants it his way, and he wants, and he doesn't. And you know, he's made millionaires and billionaires out of people, and he's destroyed people, and he's not good for the press. He's not a good guy.
Well, it was interesting. One of the stories in the last few weeks about the Ukraine crisis mention Mikhail Gorbachev,
sure. Yeah.
Who is, I think, highly regarded in the West, and the Russian people do not like him at all.
Yeah, you know? True.
And he was the one that kind of brought the Westernization.
Which is why they don't like him.
Right, because it has been harsh. It hasn't been an easy transition.
I mean, it's no different than in Bosnia, where I work, where people remember Tito. There, you can buy Tito sure. paraphernalia any place you go because he's a hero. The man, you know, killed people.
He
kept the country consolidated, but at a huge cost.
And everybody knew, by the way, that the moment he walked out, it was done.
Yeah, he never set up a succession. Mm-hmm. So, and the Putin of his first term, remember, he was president and then went out and became, I guess, prime minister and then now is back. But that first term was a little bit different. That he really pushed to make Russia a player on the world scale. He's the one who lobbied to get into the G8 in the first place. And now it's different. He's had some change of heart. There's a lot of writing about this, looking at he's disappointed in what the West has done. He does not see that there's any advantage for throwing in with them. And so he's on this new course. Scary.
We would love to hear from you, roundtable at wamc.org, and we have we always love your letters. As far as the we only have about a minute left. Anybody want to weigh in real quick in the lightning round and weigh in on the NSA?
People are very deeply suspicious of having another person on the phone with them. I mean, I think that, you know, Americans just don't like the idea. The Obama people have taken and burned the midnight oil, taken a close look at it, and said, we're not winning anything here. We have to come out and say we don't like it. And that's what they're doing.
Yeah, that's true. And the cat's out of the bag. We know what NSA is capable of. And now the president is saying, we'll pass a bill saying they can't do it anymore. Man, that does not convince me.
And the phone
companies are going to have to keep the records themselves
right,
now.
Right.
Oh, yeah, which is absurd. And but who, you know, I mean, this is awful. Who gave us the information that this was going on?
A whistleblower who is now hiding in Russia.
Where? Oh. Russia. Oh.
And you
Mr.
know what they're
Putin.
Saying about him?
Mr. Putin
that
is
he's
helping.
Really a Russian spy. That
he's
he has
not
been
a
Russian spy all, the,
I,
all
I
along. It's absurd.
That. Never believed that.
We
no.
forced them to do
it. He wasn't in the box with Putin during the Olympics.
But there are people who think he's a hero for exactly this reason.
I would like to point out that the law that the president is pushing would allow them to do what we always thought they could do. You keep it private unless you have probable cause and you go
and
to
you
a
go
court
to a judge.
And it says, yeah, you guys can have a wire. That's all that it does.
As long as it's not a secret judge with a mask over his face.
Yeah, well, they want to set up some whole new kind of court system to do
a
this, too.
Court.
I think that's crazy.
We always welcome your comments. Let the conversation let it continue. It'll continue tomorrow here at this very, very time and place. However, if you want to keep it continuing, all you have to do is write to us, roundtable at wamc.org. We would love to hear from you. Mike Spain, Rosemary Romeo, and Alan Chartok, thank you so much. And we will sail tomorrow.
Thanks for having us, Joe.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe.
You are listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.